Welcome back to the StoryCorps Athens Father's Day Special. Donald Downey grew up in Mississippi, and he's led a colorful life. But his struggle with Alzheimer's was the catalyst that prompted his daughter, Stacy Court, to participate in the StoryCorps project. Donald's ability to remember things from one minute to the next has been deteriorating as his disease progresses, but his childhood memories are still intact. Stacy took this opportunity to record the experiences that shaped her father's childhood.
So, Dad, I remember hearing some family story about you living on a plantation in Mississippi when you were a kid. How did that happen?
We moved to Mississippi, 1944, I think. Oh, I must have been 6 years old. My grandfather fancied himself to be a really good realtor, and he found out that there was a huge plantation about 20 miles south of Meridian, Mississippi, that they wanted to sell the property so that they could divide up the spoils among the heirs, I suppose, or something like that. At any rate, my grandfather undertook to do that, and he persuaded my dad to come down with him. And what they did, the deal was, the old plantation it was overgrown. It had not been cultivated for years.
So this was not like Gone with the Wind with beautiful house and servants all over the place.
No. What this was like was about a plantation that was perhaps 3 miles wide along a river for about 10 miles.
Wow.
Was what it was. And it was really good river bottom land. It was rich land. It had not been farmed for years, several years. And as a result, most of the previous cropland was overgrown by saplings.
So, Dad, was there a house on the property that you all lived in?
There was a hunting cabin. It was a hunting lodge. No, it wasn't. This was a wealthy family in Meridian, Mississippi, who loved to go down 20 miles down south to their holdings there and go hunting occasionally. So they built themselves a 3-bedroom house. On the edge of the property, so that they could have their comforts.
Did you tell me once, I seem to remember a story about maybe when you lived in Laurel and you went wading into some pond or something?
Oh, yeah. We lived just at the end of the city bus line north of Laurel. There were two, we called them sloughs, one between the house and the road, and we had a bridge that went across that one, and there was like a ridge of dry land, and behind it there was another big slough back there.
Okay.
You would wade out. You would start in no water, and then you'd take your bare feet and proceed on out, clothes and all, usually, into the doggone thing. And there was a semi-suspension of dirt in the bottom of that doggone pond back there. And us kids loved it. And until my mother caught on and made us use we didn't have any electricity there. And so we had to use a scrub board to clean our clothes. And that stopped that little waiting.
So you came in covered with mud, and she said, the heck with this, you wash this yourself.
Exactly.
Smart woman.
Right.
So how many times did you go wading in the mud after that?
Nairn. Not any.
That's great. That's really great, Dad. Thank you so much for telling me these stories of your childhood. I love you, Dad.
Well, I love you too, sugar.
James Darnell served in the Air Force during Vietnam and became an instructor pilot for American soldiers. Then, as part of the Vietnamization policy, he began training South Vietnamese soldiers. In this story, he tells his daughters Julie and Lindsay Darnell about some of the students he taught and why he loved flying so much.
Will you tell the story about Nome?
Yes. I first went back as an instructor. I taught American students, and then they started a program of teaching Vietnamese pilots as part of the Vietnamization of the war. And so we started, I went to another squadron where we were doing the training of Vietnamese students. Noam was one of my students, and he was a really hardworking guy, and he did pretty good in pilot training. And then he went back to the war, and he survived and ended up as a refugee. They were flying missions right up to the last few days of the war, and he didn't know he was even going to be a refugee. He just got on a plane, thought he was going to another base to fly, and ended up as a refugee.
Oh, he didn't realize he was leaving.
No, he didn't even know. He just ended up in, I don't know where his plane took him, out of the country somewhere, Laos, Cambodia, I can't remember. I don't know where. And then they took a lot of the refugees, went to camps in the United States, some of them did. So he ended up in one of these camps. And a lot of the ones that had trained in the States, would have known their instructor or somebody. So they tried to make contact. And those of us that had trained him were aware, we're looking for some of the students too, I guess. So anyway, he made contact with us. And came to live with us for a while. I don't know, you might remember vaguely. You would have been pretty small then, but he lived with us for a while, and then we moved, and then he stayed. He was in Wichita Falls at the time, and he stayed there and stayed with another friend of ours, a local person, not a military person, and did a variety of jobs, learned to be a welder, learned to repair electronics, eventually went to Alaska and worked on fishing boats.
Really?
Then he eventually went and got a degree in computer science or something, and he's a professional in the business world now.
Was he the one that didn't like to fly?
No. I had another, actually in the same class, another student who, he would say, if the weather was bad and we didn't go out to fly that day, he would say, "No fly, no die." And he was the smartest kid ever. I mean, he was a good artist. He knew several languages. I mean, he was a really neat person, but he wasn't really cut out to be a military pilot. But
must be hard training people up to know that they're sending them out there and sort of lambs to the slaughter.
Yeah. Yes, there was a bit of that sentiment, actually. I mean, we did know, we kind of followed a little bit or got news back from our former students sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So we had an idea of what was happening to them, and that it's kind of hard to imagine what it felt like now, thinking back on it, I guess.
Are there things that you miss about being a pilot? Or?
Oh, yes. Yes, I like the flying. I like just the physical part of the flying.
Yeah.
Was the most fun, I think. And then the crews, kind of work together. It's fun to work with other people, and then even with the airline, it was interesting going somewhere.
Yeah.
It's always a sort of a mini adventure, I suppose. You go off to wherever, Europe or South America or someplace, and you have an adventure for a day or two, and you come home. So that was fun.
Sophie Newport was born with Williams syndrome, a heart condition that has resulted in many surgeries throughout her life. In this conversation, Sophie and her father, Richard, talk about trips the family have taken as a result of Richard's job teaching French cinema. The duo talk about French director Agnès Varda, who passed away in March of 2019. Varda was an influential female director. In 2017, she was the first woman in history to receive an honorary Academy Award.
When you're not in Athens, Georgia, do you ever like to travel?
Yeah.
Yeah, where do you go?
France.
You go to France. You've been there many times. What do you like best about going to Paris?
The food, especially the escargot.
Escargot. You like the snails, that's true. Yeah, what else do you like to eat in French restaurants? We'll start there.
Beef bourguignon.
Bourguignon, yes. And you also have learned, luckily it took a while, you've learned to like French bread. So if you walked into a boulangerie, if you went into a French bakery, what would you order?
Baguette, s'il vous plaît.
Very good. Yes, so that's great. Yeah, we go to France. Why do we go to France often in summers?
To teach.
We go there to do research for our teaching. Oops. Sometimes we've taught. Sometimes we've taught summer school just a couple times or give guest lectures someplace. But yeah, Kathy's a French professor, so she can do research at her library. And what do I work on?
Film.
Yeah, my specialty is French cinema. So I can go to lots of movies there and go to the archives, and then you get to hang out with one of us when the other one's working. So what do you and I do for fun most of the time there, do you think, that you appreciate the most?
Going to train stations.
We do go to a lot of train stations. Do you have a favorite?
I like all.
You like all the gares, all the train stations. Gare du Nord, Montparnasse. And how do you get from place to place in Paris usually?
You ride the metro.
The metro, that subway is great. And what do you like about riding the trains? Because you used to be afraid of certain sounds. And when you were the first time we ever went, you were only 8 years old. We were afraid you'd think it was too noisy to get in the metro and the subway. But you loved it. What do you love about it?
How it moved.
Yeah, you like the moving and some of the noises. We also went through that tunnel. Do you remember that one train?
Eurostar.
Oh, the Eurostar. That's right. What was silly that time? I remember you were laughing so hard at one point.
Somebody throwing crumbs.
Can you explain what's going on with crumbs?
A guy was sneezing.
Oh, and then some guy sneezed. Oh, he woke you up. You were sleeping with your head in your mom's lap, and she kept waiting for you to wake up, but you were sound asleep. And she was really hungry, so she finally decided, okay, I got to eat my sandwich. So she was carefully trying to eat her sandwich, and some guy sneezed the loudest sneeze across the aisle we'd ever heard. It woke you up, and all of a sudden you thought, hey, what's going on in my hair? And what had happened?
Somebody dropping crumbs.
She had dropped some crumbs in your hair, and I just remember you laughed and laughed at the sneeze and the crumbs. And you had just a lovely day. So, what questions do you have for me anymore?
Why do you teach film?
Ooh, yeah, that's terrific. Well, when I was in French class, I had this terrific teacher. And one day she said, you know, you work so hard in French culture stuff. You always like the movies. She said, why don't you take some film classes? I'm like, film classes? You can take classes in that? So I went over to Communication Arts Department. I went to class there, and they were just wonderful. So I not only got to specialize in cinema, and in way back in 1980, when I went to France for a whole year, back then there were no cell phones and you couldn't email, so I would write letters home and stuff. But I got to meet some of the most important professors in the world. So yeah, I love movies, and I love French movies. And gotten to meet a lot of really important people by going to film festivals and conferences and meet people I never thought I'd meet, one of whom you know. Have you ever met a French movie director?
Agnès Varda.
Agnès Varda. We've known Agnès Varda now for quite a while. And Agnès likes you. And first time I met her at a conference, you were just had a dangerous surgery. And talked about you, and ever since, every time I see her, now she's 90 years old, every time I see her, she asks, how is my Sophie? So yeah, that's good. You ask about my work. I know you get tired of us talking about it a lot. Kathy and I talk about the university a lot, but it's great. It's what we do, and it gives us a lot of chance to go travel.
10-year-old Juliet Canarella brought her father, Dustin, to the StoryCorps mobile booth to talk about, in Juliet's words, their crazy family. The pair discuss their hopes and dreams and the family's fun traditions. Here are Juliet and Dustin.
I'm Juliet. I'm 10, and the person I am speaking to is my dad.
I was thinking about how me and your mom call you Bug. And I wanted to know if you could tell me what you know about why we call you Bug.
I don't know.
You know, you never knew why we called you Bug?
No, I feel like you've told me sometimes, but I either wasn't paying attention or I just don't remember.
Okay. Well, you know it's a ladybug, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when your mom was pregnant with you, there were a lot of worries, and it made me and your mom really stressed out. And lots of times we'd get little signals. And one of the signals that we kept getting was little ladybugs would show up. And we knew they were good luck. And then when you were born, you were so small, like a bug. So we just thought it was a great nickname.
Mm-hmm.
If there's one aspect of your life that you feel other people need to know to really understand the type of person you are, what do you think that aspect is?
That my brother has autism, and so I'm careful, and I don't like to be mean.
Yes. You're very patient with your brother. I think that's a very important thing that people need to know about you as well. How would you describe your family?
Crazy.
Crazy.
I think you guys are crazy and funny because you always dress up for Halloween in really weird costumes. I like your Halloween costume, Rex Kwando from Napoleon Dynamite.
Yes.
And then I liked your Liz and Liz costume.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my two favorites.
That was fun. A lot of times I think we do family-themed costumes. You don't participate in the family-themed costumes sometimes, though.
I remember when you're like, you, Mom, and Judah were all Bob's Burgers characters.
Yeah.
And then I forgot what I was that year.
Yeah. You got to start joining the family themes.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to ask me?
What was your dream job?
Ooh. Well, you were looking at my baby book.
Yeah.
This last week, and what did it say?
It said that you wanted to be a trash man or a bag boy.
Yes. And my mom was not happy when she saw that. I was a little kid when I wrote that, though. So do you mean, like, when I really started thinking about what I wanted to be?
Yeah.
I've had lots of different passions about what I wanted to be. Before I became a teacher, you know, that I was in school and learning about urban planning, and I really liked that.
What's that?
Like planning cities, but the time was not good for that, so that didn't work.
If everybody was nice to each other and there were only scientific problems, what would you be the happiest to see change?
You know, I think that if people put more faith in science generally and understood the value from that, that'd be really important. I was reading an article last night about how there's lots of genetic diseases that they just don't have cures for, and they could find cures, but they can't put the money into finding the cures because so few people have these specific diseases, and finding those cures really wouldn't be that hard if they just had the right amount of resources to put to it.
What's your biggest fear?
I don't know. I guess that things aren't going to get better.
So, like, scientifically or people being nice?
People. Yeah.
I think my biggest fear is that we never use physical things again and that everything is... I'm not, like, saying robots are going to come to life, but that we're going to be using technology all the time.
Yeah, and people become too detached.
Kind of like in WALL-E.
I really enjoyed getting to talk to you.
Me too.
I love you.
I love you.
Most of us have experienced that uncomfortable first date, but it's doubtful many have experienced quite the date Bill Bracewell had with his now wife. Here, his daughter, Allison Bracewell McCulloch, makes him relive the story one more time, much to his chagrin.
How did they meet?
My dad was working for the George Fire Company.
Right.
And he got his paycheck, and he would go to the bank to cash it, and there was a teller there that he took a liking to. She had bright red hair, so that he said that she looked like a bush on fire.
Ooh.
And so he always went to her window to get his check cash, and that's how they met.
Wow.
Yep. Sounded like something in a movie.
It does.
Hollywood kind of thing.
Tell me about when you proposed to Mom.
Well, no, that's not the worst part. The worst part is our first date.
Oh, that's true. I forgot. Where did you take her on your first date?
I took her out to dinner.
Yes, and which then, seems quite reasonable.
That's right. And we then I said, there's a new place in Athens called Boar's Head. It's out at Five Points.
Right, right fashionable
in
Five
Athens,
Points.
Athens, Georgia. And we went, and I was going to, we had a glass of wine. I mean, we were so grown up, and looking across the table, and I was hopeful I was making some time with this lady. And then suddenly the lights went down, and it got very dark. And I looked around, and then the spotlights came on, and in the corner was a small stage, I mean tiny, and then this woman came out topless and started dancing. Now, what do you tell a woman on your first date and you've taken her to a bar with topless dancers? I will tell you now, for all the world to hear, I did not know they had topless dancers at the Boar's Head. But I did not believe that she, a smart, professional woman, would ever believe that. But that's all I could say. And we left shortly after that. And I went home and I said, that's it. That's the end of that relationship. She will never speak to me again. But I was able to overcome that, fortunately. What would you tell your mom and dad? How'd they do?
I've listened to stories from other people who had very challenging lives growing up. I had a happy life. You and Mom would take me on trips and taught me to love travel and listen to people and how to be patient with others. And I mean, I don't think I ever worried for anything growing up, which not everybody can say.
Oh.
And growing up in a college town is pretty special because you have
the
world at your fingertips without all the big city stresses. So to grow up here was pretty wonderful. And y'all are, as I tell you regularly, the best parents of ever.
Oh, and you're the best daughter of ever.
That's right.
And your daughter's the best granddaughter of ever.
She is. She's pretty awesome.
She is. She's amazing. She's wonderful.
Our final conversation comes from Bob Guy and his daughter, Dr. Catherine Birch. Bob served in the Army for 27 years before changing gears to become a middle school teacher. Here, you'll hear Bob tell Catherine about what he learned in those early years of teaching and how his students continued educating him years later.
So, Dad, tell me a little about your career prior to teaching.
Well, I grew up, you know, wanting to be a soldier. I was fortunate enough to get an appointment to West Point and go into the service. And I stayed for 27 years and absolutely loved it.
So why did you want to become a middle school teacher?
I started thinking about what did I want to do after the service. And I decided, because, well, for lots of reasons, that I wanted to become a classroom teacher. I've been a teacher. I was a teacher every year of the 27 years I was in the service, because that's what you do. But we call that training. But it was teaching. You know, let's face it, that's exactly what it was. I liked the teaching, and I liked being in a learning environment, and it just fit me really well.
People often hear about how difficult the first year of teaching is. What was your first year like?
Oh, my goodness. What a question. And I don't think you'll find a teacher anywhere that doesn't remember their first year clearly and vividly. And the first year is extremely difficult. We had a friend of my wife's, that was an administrator in another place. And she told us, when I told her how hard it was after we got started and all, she said, oh, make it till Christmas. And I said, oh, okay. So, and you know, she's right. She was right. If you could make the first 6 months, your learning curve had been so steep that you weren't able to coast the second semester, but you knew a little bit. You knew about how to plan it. You knew about how classroom management and all the things that had to happen in there, and you were able to make that work.
Did you have any epiphanies during your teaching career?
Oh, yes. I had one that was extremely meaningful to me, and I want to mention that. I was going on a sabbatical in the 2003-2004 school year. So I had the opportunity for that year to go and all around the state and do some things. So I figured that it might be a good idea to have something to talk about. So what I did was I used to get feedback from my students about, you know, the year. I used to always ask my students, okay, what subject did you like the best? What did you like the least? What would you recommend? And so forth. But this time I was going to ask my students, I was going to survey them. So I told them to think about the teachers that they remembered best and try to analyze what made those teachers the best. And then they were to complete a statement for me. The statement was a good teacher and then blank, 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 and they'd fill it out. And so I answered the question myself because I'd want the question answered. A good teacher, I mean, I filled it out myself. I said, a good teacher, and then here's what I said, knows his or her subject well. Okay, and I mean, you can't argue with that. A good teacher is fair. I think that's important also. And a good teacher maintains control in the classroom. Now, I think any teacher would tell you that those three things were very important. Absolutely. But you know what? None of those were things that my students said. The most popular student response by far, a good teacher makes learning enjoyable. That's what they said. Carrying that a little further, has a sense of humor, smiles a lot, and whose classroom atmosphere is happy. That was the epiphany I think that I would mention, and that still sticks with me, even though I'm retired from teaching today. If I get a chance to go back and see students, I do something to make learning enjoyable for them.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of StoryCorps Athens. We hope you've enjoyed these conversations from the dads of the Classic City. StoryCorps Athens stories were recorded locally at the StoryCorps mobile booth at the Athens Clark County Library in the fall of 2018. StoryCorps is part of a national initiative to record and preserve the stories of everyday people. All of these interviews were produced locally by Morgan Fry. For WUGA, I'm Kathy Bradbury.